Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius. I'm in Londinium. It's a fall evening by the Thames. And we will speak of the swans tonight because there is fresh swan meat in the markets. And the centurions, retired, were bragging about how only Londinium in all the empire has fresh swan meat. It takes weeks for it to go the high road to Rome, where the senators enjoy it. We can enjoy it routinely because they're in the Thames estuary. I personally don't recommend it if you're feeling delicate about the beauty of the swans, but it's said to be, I have a recipe, in fact, that the centurions gave me. If I have a chance, I'll give it out tonight. Germanicus is here. We're going to turn to something that isn't elegant like swans, even dead swans. We're going to turn to the story of political vengeance and how it's been practiced for 2,000 years. We Romans recognize it. Apparently, it's worthwhile for the American editorial pages to discover it fresh because of Emperor Trump. We begin tonight, however, reviewing the week that was. Chiefly, it was dominated by talk of Vladimir Putin and the Kremlin redoubling their efforts to win their battle for Donbass, and the disappointment of the Trump administration. We're told that they weren't ready to come to the table to negotiate. We're told, and that the idea of the summit in Budapest is postponed, delayed, canceled, choose one, who knows. However, there is the conversation of we'll talk about it, and that's engaging. At the same time, Mr. Zelensky was in Europe meeting with the Coalition of the Willing. That's the usual suspects in NATO, absent the U.S. this time. And Mr. Starmer, Sir Keir Starmer, was making lavish promises to Mr. Zelensky. Moving to other subjects, however, there's a fun topic this week. Mr. Trump has an architect who believes in the Greco-Roman casino style and is proposing putting a building up where it used to be in the East Room of the White House that is, I guess it's twice as large as the foot space of the rest of the White House complex. However, on Friday in Washington, the editorial appeared, unless it was Saturday, both days, from the Washington Post endorsing the building that can seat 999, we're told, in the drawings, saying it's embarrassing for a country to have to put up tents on the South Lawn every time there's a larger dinner than 200 or 300. So Mr. Trump will have his Greco-Roman Las Vegas building in the eventuality that some court doesn't step in and put a temporary restraining order on it. However, there's other news, so we need to attend to that immediately. Germanicus, a very good evening to you. The other news is the Ukraine front, in which there have been advances to the point of encirclements. Explain, please, and then we'll discuss siege tactics and how we Romans do it. Good evening to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, Gaius. The Russians have very adroitly decided on a strategy that will keep the lid on a war and prevent some kind of hysterical escalation on the part of NATO, and at the same time ensure ultimate collapse of the Ukrainian army. And that has been a battle of attrition, but they've been adroit not just in pursuing attrition, but taking the opportunity offered to them by Ukraine that has insisted, and it's been Mr. Zelensky foremost among the cabal of his regime that has insisted, much as Herr Hitler did or is repeated to have done in the Eastern Front in World War II, which is to say, not one inch in retreat, fight to the end. And unfortunately, that has been Ukraine's strategy, and it has really essentially done them in, or is in the process of entering that final phase wherein the Ukrainian military will fall. And that was the pathway followed by Ukraine at Bakhmut, at Avdiivka, and other cities, and is now about to befall Pokrovsk and Kupiansk, and the total bag, as they say, of Ukrainian forces could be as much as 10,000. There's a number of very hollowed out battalions that have been essentially encircled, completely caught in the noose. And the term that is preferred by Russians is cauldron. And so there are these two cauldrons which have surrounded the cities of Pokrovsk and its sister city of Mirnograd, and then also Kupiansk. And the problem is twofold here, that attrition has reached a point where losing 10,000 soldiers, if indeed that is the outcome, will not only demoralize Ukraine further, and again send NATO into hysterics of sackcloth and ashes, but it also pushes the Ukrainian military closer and closer to the edge, because there are so few available bodies, and I use that term deliberately, to replace the losses. And the losses are terrible to a large degree, given the unwillingness of Ukraine to pull back from positions that it refuses to give up. And this is a real problem in poor strategy in war. People don't want to give up a city which has symbolic significance because it represents a tremendous loss. But in fact, trading space for time is essential in any defense that wants to persevere and continue the fight, and do so with the utmost efficiency in order to prolong the struggle as much as possible. And that has not been the Ukrainian approach. And as a result, they are in deep trouble right now. But they're in trouble, again, from two angles, both from the actual losses they have sustained over the last 4 years from pursuing this strategy, but also they're at a point where the Russians can break through across the front.
Siege tactics. The ones that come to mind for we Romans, Carthage, especially the second one, the 146 BC, Corinth, Jerusalem, and Masada. You've got some as well. I just generally speak to those who study Roman history. Rome was very good at siege tactics, didn't like it. The centurions didn't like it. It took time. It was slow. You didn't eat well. You had to worry about water resources and discipline while you were waiting for the enemy to either starve to death or slay themselves or surrender. But they were very good at it, and they had first-rate artillery. And generally speaking, when a defense is thrown up as a fortress, similar to what you just described, many fortresses in Ukraine, that is the beginning of the end. They lose to Rome. And I'm presuming Russia is carrying on the Roman tradition. How do you measure?
It's similar, but different as well. It's similar in the sense that if you put enough resources into defending a place, then when the defense collapses, your losses have been so disproportionate and you've lost many of your soldiers as prisoners of war, that the battle is a blow. And that blow is compounded by the fact, as I said, that this city has been made into a symbol of resistance and of ultimate victory because it won't be taken. But of course, the secret is superior forces always win a siege. Now, in Roman times, this process was similar, but it was compounded many times by the fact that this was an agricultural society with low levels or low rates of urbanization. So there would be, in a war, a fortified place that would be the nerve center of the entire nation or tribe, or the place that was the seat of government, or that had the treasury, that kept currency flowing, and finally that had the elite people who counted in that place. And that was the ancient world of Caesar and Vespasian and our own Emperor Domitian. And therefore, to take a capital city of a tribe or a larger nation would end the war. And as a result, like Ukraine, enormous resources were put into defending these places or developing places that were on top of great hills and were beautifully fortified in stone. And so a siege was not only a battle, and it would not only cause enemy attrition, but because it was so central to the life of that society, once the Romans took the city, that was it. It was the end of the war. And that was true in a number of great conflicts. You mentioned Carthage. Once Carthage fell, everything collapsed, because Carthage was not just the stronghold, but the nerve center, but it was everything. It was the metropolis, the center of economic life, it was the center of wealth, et cetera, et cetera. And this was true also of the very long 7 to 8 year campaign that Caesar fought in Gaul. He conquered Gaul through a series of battles, yes, but ultimately the breaking point for Gallic resistance were sieges. One of the first was the city of Avaricum, which was the biggest and best fortified town of the Bitoriges, one of the biggest nations. And he took that intensely fortified place by building a giant ramp over 100 feet high and hundreds of feet long. It had to be hundreds of feet long in order to have a slope that the Romans could push their huge siege towers up. And once those siege towers reached the summit of the artificial hill they had produced, the ramp, the town fell. And the Romans were able to do this in a single month. At the siege of Alesia, facing huge numbers of Gallic warriors that had been raised by the charisma or through the charisma of Vercingetorix, tried to come to the rescue of Vercingetorix and part of his army, which was holed up in an oppidum, a hilltop city fortress called Alesia. But in order to successfully take that, because there was a huge relieving army that was going to come and break that siege, Caesar had to build a gigantic set of fortifications, not only around and encircling the city of Alesia to keep it, you know, bottled up, but also facing outward a second, even larger girdling of fortifications. And these were called in Latin the lines of circumvallation around the city, and the lines of contravallation, meaning facing outwards. And so the Romans had to fight a double siege battle that went on for quite some time against a gigantic relieving army, as well as a very large army that Vercingetorix had. And this was one of the great sieges of antiquity and celebrated for the amazing organizational effort and engineering of focus that Caesar was able to apply. And there were more of these in the future. In our time, for example, facing the king of the Dacians, let's see here, Decebalus, the Romans would focus not just on defeating Dacian armies, but taking the capital city, which was Sarmizegetusa. And that city was surrounded not just by its own walls, with, you know, its own water supply, its own great situation at the top of a mountain, but that city was surrounded by its own ring of fortresses, so that to get at the capital, the Romans had to reduce each one of these encircling fortresses. This is very similar to what the Germans had to do at the Siege of Paris in 1870-71. So that took an entire year. And the thing about sieges is that you have to be ready and able to fight a protracted war of attrition to wear down the fortifications, but more importantly, the defenders. You wear them down by killing them, but then ultimately they'll run out of food, and then sickness can break out. And the Romans, of course, unlike so many armies in antiquity, did not have to necessarily worry about their own forces getting sick because of the extraordinary design of their encampments and the incredible civil engineering that went into them to ensure that sickness would be kept at arm's length. So what the Romans did in all of these campaigns that culminated in a great dramatic climax of a siege was very similar to what the Russians have done. So at Bakhmut, which was celebrated as an impregnable fortress that would never fall, the Ukrainians poured tens of thousands of men into that siege, even though the Russians had tens to one, you know, not just 10 to one, but several times that of artillery and the capacity to just flatten the place, which they ultimately did. And it cost them a lot of casualties, many of them Russian prisoners who volunteered, you know, get out of jail free, but not so free because they went into a storm of steel. But the Russians took it, and the Ukrainians lost disproportionate numbers of their army, and it really weakened them for the future. And then that was followed by Avdiivka, and it's now being followed by Kupiansk and Pokrovsk.
One detail about sieges, Roman style. Once the siege was broken and the Roman forces got inside the walls, they ransacked the place. There was no stopping them. That was their reward for the siege.
That's tradition.
Even in Jerusalem, Titus, who was commanding the forces, his father had gone back to become emperor. Titus couldn't stop them. And they ransacked it, even the temple, stole everything. In fact, there was so much gold. The story goes, this is Josephus, that the price of gold went down. That's how much gold came out of Jerusalem. The price of slaves went down. That's how many slaves came out, because what then Titus did was give the order, destroy the city. So they slaughtered the men, and the women and children went into slavery. This is fall of the temple in the great revolt of 66 to 70. Masada came 3 years later and was a band of zealots. But the Russians will make that decision. The Roman way is to level the city, salt the fields, poison the wells, and sell the women and children into slavery. That's the Roman way. I don't know if that's the Russian way. I can't tell.
Well, I mean, the Russians are telling us very clearly, and they're taking great pains to tell us that is not the Russian way. In fact, just today in the big briefing on these cauldrons at Pokrovsk and Kupiansk, Gerasimov was careful to say that we always show mercy. And of course, the Russians have every reason to do so. One is that it really cements, reinforces their propaganda message, because to them it's a just war, and they want to show that their cause is just and humane. And second of all, it's a very real motivation in the sense that they're fighting fellow. I don't know. There's a deep kinship of two related peoples, and of course most Ukrainians speak Russian and have been in the Russian realm for as long as the U.S. has existed, for example. So it's a feeling that it's brother against brother, and of course the Ukrainian regime doesn't feel that way. They call the Russians orcs or Muscovites. But I think it's very different among regular people. So this is not that kind of Roman situation. In fact, Rome wasn't like that in its civil wars either. And you see, there is no, after Philippi, for example, there was no, you know, cruelty shown. In fact, all of the soldiers were forgiven if they, you know, swore an oath to Caesar, and they, et cetera, et cetera. And Caesar was angry that the Egyptians had Pompey beheaded. There's a different kind of code when it's, you know, brother against brother or cousin against cousin. And so this is, I feel a different kind of way moving ahead. Plus, the Russians really do want to signal to Ukrainians as a whole, not to the regime necessarily, which is obdurate, but to Ukrainians that, hey, we're not here for conquest and for breaking Ukraine. We want to end this. And so I think the Russians will make much of how well they treat the prisoners that they take.
The emperor is building on the grounds of the palace. When we come back, the controversy of the Greco-Roman casino style of the new White House. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. Germanicus and I are here. Germanicus, I did not know. We have a veteran of the Siege of Jerusalem here, one of the centurions. He's not here today, but they told me that he'd be happy to tell stories about the sacking of the city afterwards because it made him rich. In fact, he's much admired because he was able to not spend his cash, but salt it away so he could retire. We'll tell stories in subsequent weeks. We're going to turn to building a gigantic addendum to the White House. This is the Friends of History Debating Society in Londinium. This is live. You're not ahead of us. We're not ahead of you. I'm John Batchelor.
Shop Wayfair now, month-long big deals. Yeah, these are steals.
70% less money spent.
You can't go wrong. Check out the song. Festive decor, Black Friday score.
Garlands and trees.
Saving with ease.
Lights for your house, lamps for your spouse.
Save at Wayfair.
On dining chairs, mattresses, two sheets that are you. Everything home, these things in chrome. Here's a the clock, area rugs. Fast shipping, wow, Wayfair is how.
Win the season, win the season.